Justin, can I admit something to you that I'm not proud of?
Is it how many hot dogs you've eaten?
Well, I am proud of that. So many that I lost count, and I was just like, 12. I think I'm lowballing it, but feels it's good. Fine. Yeah. Please don't tell anyone this. I will.
My lips are sealed.
So I've, like, this year gotten really big into drinks. You know, like things that you put in your mouth that are wet and you swallow them and it just, like, keeps you hydrated.
Okay.
I wish I didn't say it like that, but.
Yeah, well.
Here we are. No way to go back and change it now.
No, we got to continue down this path.
I've gotten really big into drinks.
Okay.
And I have discovered, and this is fucking shameful, dog. I've discovered that one of my, I love the drink Prime.
Oh, no. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Wow. Which,
if you're not familiar with, Prime is it Jake Paul or Logan Paul? The one with the better hair.
Depends on their haircut.
The older one, I believe.
I think it's Logan Paul,
the wrestler, not the don't pretend boxer.
Wait. They don't both box?
Logan Paul is a wrestler, so he's part of, like, WWE. Jake Paul is a wannabe boxer.
Okay.
And he just challenges people who are old and not boxers.
But makes millions of dollars, I think.
I mean, if I could make millions of dollars beating up an old man, sure.
Would you get in the ring with Mike Tyson for
not a fucking chance? Are you kidding me?
500 million. 500 million.
Well, like right now? No. Like, do I have like a year of training or whatever?
You sure? Yeah. To me, that doesn't change the math for me. I mean, why spend a year to get beat up when I could just get beat up and be done with it, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I'm going to really sit and think about it, about what it is worth for that to happen. Because it would have to be like televised. Like, do I want everyone to see me get my ass beat?
I would probably shit my pants. Like,
oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That'd be probably one of the scariest things ever.
If I tap out instantly, is that okay? Is that allowed?
If it's not in the rules.
But if I tap out instantly, do I still get the money?
What if you have to get touched at least one time?
Oh, no. I'm saying, like, if I go down one time and I'm like, you know what? That was it.
Oh, yeah. Like, you just play dead.
Like, yeah. I love Prime, and it's really embarrassing because it's not a subtle drink. Do you know what I mean? It's not a very subtle bottle here. And there's, you know, it's more embarrassing than buying one of these.
Buying a 24 pack.
Buying six of them because it's 3 for $5, you know. But I've been drinking these things, and listen, I don't love the Pauls and their whole shit. Really at all. I really don't like them, to be honest with you. Everything I know about them, I disapprove of. But I like this drink a lot, and it's really embarrassing.
Because I don't drink energy drinks anymore. Like, I try to stay away from things that I'm not sure what they are. Is Prime an energy drink?
So they have two versions. There's a Prime, the energy drink, which is in a can, which I have not had. And this is Prime Hydration, which is like a Gatorade like competitor.
Okay.
So there's no caffeine in this. That said, I will say this. I am not disillusioned to the fact that this is not a good Gatorade competitor. Like, their whole thing is like, oh, it's got all the electrolytes. Blah, 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 blah. Apparently it is like, this is not good. This is not like going to be doing the same things that like a regular sports drink is going to do. But I just like how it tastes. Does that make sense? Like, I'm not drinking this cause I'm like a competing athlete, believe it or not.
But also it's fewer calories than
than Gatorade?
Yeah, I think it's like, what, 25, it looks like?
So the one I've got right now is 25, but also there are Gatorades that are like that too.
Well, but Gatorade zero calorie kind of tastes bad.
Oh, I like it, okay.
I mean, okay, the real question is, do any zero calorie drinks taste better significantly than other drinks?
Diet Baja Blast?
I still think the Baja Blast, that still does.
I mean, I would take a regular one, but I'm not turning my nose up at a diet.
I would probably do that. Yeah. Does Taco Bell serve those yet, or is it still just the regular?
They serve them.
Oh, they do. Ooh. They do. Oh,
that's how I was introduced, baby.
Speaking of drinks, my wife got me a Scooter's coffee drink.
I don't even know what Scooter's is.
It's like a little coffee place. One opened up on near the Promenade Mall.
Oh,
like
okay,
in between
okay.
the Promenade and the Portillo's, just to put another P. It's the P sandwich. That didn't sound right, but it's in between those two locations. But it's like a little shop that like sells like coffee and other drinks and stuff like that. But this is actually pretty good. It was I'm really boring when it comes to my coffee drinks because like I don't like to drink like high calorie things or anything like that. So this is just a nitro cold brew and they put some ice in there. Tastes really good actually. Almost better than Starbucks, I would say. But my wife got this like had like a vanilla sweet cream foam and something like that. She drank it. Thought it was too sweet. She preferred mine. But you know who really did like that drink? That sweet drink?
Let me say little old Archie.
Little old Archie loved it. And like they have these little...
it right up.
And yeah, well, it has like a place where you like a sip thing on the top.
Yeah.
He put his tongue through there and boy, was he happy. And he did not stop looking at that drink for at least 10 minutes. He just was like standing and looking at my bedside table being like, man... And
please,
and
maybe I can I get in there?
Yeah,
is it cool if I get in there?
Yeah, I have this thing where I try to it's the weekend. I have eggs on the weekend just because you got to celebrate the weekend. Eggs are expensive, so I have like some scrambled eggs, some toast and jelly, maybe a banana, and some coffee every morning. I like it on my weekend, and I have to give him a little bit of everything just because we're sharing breakfast together. So he gets the eggs. Gets a little bit of toast, doesn't really like banana too much, but once in a while, he will drink my coffee, and I kind of like that.
When you say he drinks your coffee, do you mean like you put it down, he laps it up, and then you pick up your mug and you drink from it again, or are you giving him the end?
I can understand why you think that'd be disgusting, but when your dog wakes you up by shoving his tongue up your nose every morning, I am not really disgusted by the fact that he drinks out of my coffee cup.
I will tell you this, Justin. I know that that's a challenge for me to get over. I'm open and willing to accept that, you know, people are bothered by different things than I am. I had balut, right? Like, is that,
sure.
Yeah. That's going to gross some people out. I don't know why I'm turning my nose up at dog mouth, but I am, just a little bit, but also I think that I'll say this. To my understanding, everyone's dog is nasty, but yours.
Well, yeah.
Because it's like your kid, you know?
Like, I have to not be disgusted by him because there'd be poop everywhere. I wouldn't be able to, like, I would not pick it up outside if I was disgusted by him. If I had to pick up my own poop, I don't think I could do it. His poop, I'm fine with it.
He's smaller. Yeah. It's a box! Everyone, welcome back to Hitbox episode number 245. My name is Peter Hunspitek, and joining me as always is my wonderful friend and co-host Justin Makovich. Justin, you're on summer break, but also I just realized like we are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The first episode or second episode rather in July will be 250.
That's crazy.
That's a quarter of a thousand.
Yeah, can you imagine when we get to episode 1000 in 15 years from now?
But isn't it crazy that like we've been doing this for 5 years?
I mean, really, and the math works out. That's crazy. It's only been 5 years. Feels like.
Yeah, but it feels like it was just yesterday that you texted me about it.
I know. And
an eternity ago.
It's been a consistent thing. So it doesn't feel like it's been long, but it like is been long. Cause it's just part of our life routine, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. You're doing well though on spring break or not spring break, summer break.
I gotta be honest. Not really. I'm about to, Peter. Here's the news. I just realized my whole year, I thought I was going to turn 34 in June.
Okay.
Turns out I'm turning 35. And my body, Peter, is breaking down. It's breaking
down.
I'm
sorry to hear it. Can I offer you some Prime? It might help with the...
Does it?
Joints maybe? Or?
I don't know what's wrong with me. So I've been like doing a lot more running for the past like month or whatever. And okay. there's something happened to my back and I don't know what it is, but I cannot walk. I can sit, I can lay down, I can do whatever. But when it comes to putting any weight on my right foot, there's this place in my lower back, almost like my buttocks, some might say, that creates so much like pain. I don't know if it's a nerve. I don't know if it's a muscle strain or whatever, but I'm also kind of stubborn and it's been going on for like a week and a half now and it's been getting progressively worse, but I have to keep my step goal going every single day. I got to get my 10,000 steps, Peter.
Yeah.
And I don't know what to do. Some might say stop the step goal. I'm on my streak for, do you see that? It's 1,081 days in a row of getting my 10,000 step goal. I'm about 1,000 off yet for today. So after we're done recording, I need to walk on my treadmill till I do it. But like my back has been really bad and I'm nervous because we're going to New Orleans this week and I'm gonna have to be walking around the bayou with the inability to walk and put weight right foot.
Can I suggest something? And I would say like, could you not see a doctor about this and say, hello,
It's like one of those things, like when I run, they'll occasionally, as I'm getting back into it, occasionally things will like hurt and like be a little bit off. And usually I hope I either try to run through it or like kind of like it eventually through time gets better. The problem is with this one being about a week and a half, it was like right at that sweet spot that I'm like, I can't go before I leave. Cause I'm not paying that much money to go to urgent care.
Yeah.
So when I come back before I go to my trip to Des Moines, I'll probably have to go. But as of now, it's like weird because I wasn't if I hurt, I'm not going to go the day of. I'm going to wait a little bit for it because it's not like I'm you know, my arm isn't hanging off. My foot isn't hanging off, but just hurts to walk.
I hope you feel better. I really do. It sounds painful.
Yeah. Yeah, we went to the Arboretum and to see the news, they have like snails and like these like mythical creatures throughout it. And I felt like an old man.
Yeah. I bet. Justin, here's a quick update on our hot dog count, if I may. I'm at 109, broke 100 this week. Like I had a heavy week. I estimate about 12, but I think it's probably like 15. I don't want our numbers to be so wrong when we get to the end. You know what I mean? I'm trying to stay honest here.
Gotta stay accurate. Yeah.
Yeah. You are at 169.
Hey.
First of all, nice. But also just like blowing me out of the water. Wow. I shouldn't have said blowing me, huh?
out of the hot dog water.
Yeah, I guess so.
It's going to be 171 after we record because I have to eat my dinner because I usually have hot dogs for lunch, but I have my dinner for lunch. So now I'm having hot dogs for dinner.
I had four today.
Ooh!
I had two for lunch and then two right before we started.
There we go. Because
I needed
go.
Something. Now sue me. I know this is going to sound crazy, but like with the way that we have them, as the turkey dog and in the carb smart buns, it's kind of calorically snack related, snack adjacent in terms of how much insert. You know what I mean? So it was like I could just have this real quick, and then I'll be able to have. You're like kind of splitting my dinner up into two sections, like before we record and then after. So like, I get it.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah. But hey,
in the doghouse.
I'm on pace to have 365 hot dogs this year.
Beyond
that. Yeah.
I got to catch up.
I will. You'll probably catch up with me in the next couple months during summer. Like this week, I'm not going to have that many. I'm probably going to have like on our next count, I might have 8 more. It's a small amount.
A pittance, really.
Yeah, really not great. But but like I'm going to be in New Orleans. And like if I eat hot dogs in New Orleans when there's so much other food that I like, that would be me trying to prove a point rather than just me naturally eating the hot dogs.
Just like,
you know,
enjoy
what I mean?
Your life. Yes.
Yeah, 100%. Like my goal is not to like eat 365 hot dogs. It's just like the way I eat them.
Yes.
I should be able to.
I'm on the same page. Like we're not competing. Like right. Elena was like, oh, it said to someone like, oh, they're competing. Like, no, we're not competing. We're just tracking. And like, this is just what's happened.
Because
you know what I mean? Like this is just
I do know
what's happened.
If it was a competition, we'd ruin our lives.
Yes.
For this whole year. Like it wouldn't
100%.
Be fun. It would
be sneaking
fun.
Hot dogs into other meals and stuff. We're doing pasta and hot dogs. Justin, here's a quick preview of what's coming up in the news in video games this week. There have been a lot of layoffs this week, and we're going to sort of address some of those. Randy Pitchford thinks real fans can pay $80 for video games. And the Persona 4 remake gets confirmed in kind of a backdoor way. We'll talk about all that and more, but before we do, I would like to tell our listeners that they can join our Discord server. The link to that is in the description of this episode. They can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/hitboxpod by becoming a $1 podcast producer or a $3 deluxe podcast producer like Jay Knoll, JKS, and Josh Durham. This week, we are talking about our predictions for Summer Game Fest, because that is going to be next week. I will be there in sunny Los Angeles. Come back, tell y'all all about it. But we're going to be doing our predictions and just conversation about what we're looking forward to with that in our bonus episode. If you can't support us monetarily, that's fine, though. You can follow us on Blue Sky at hitboxpod.bsky.social. The ats are longer there, but I'm just going to keep saying hitboxpod because I didn't even say it right, I don't think. We're at hitboxpod on Blue Sky, and then you'll find us. If that's
at hitboxpod. At hitboxpod. Yeah.
You can also rate this episode in your podcast player of choice. Justin, will you join me in the Metacritic Roundup?
Let's go!
Metacritic Roundup.
First game. A big mystery for this year. Elden Ring, Night Rain.
Why do you say it was a mystery?
Because it was just one of those things about, like, how, like, this is, like, the first, like, FromSoft, like, truly, like, fully, like, online sort of thing. It was a big question about, like, is this going to work in the format that it's in? Like, what is this thing, basically? Well, on the PlayStation 5, it scored a 77. On the Xbox Series X, an 89. An 87. And on the PC, an 80. So I would call this relatively mixed. On Open Critic, that, like, smashes all of that into one. Let's see here. I think it's an 80. Yeah. So not a terrible scoring game by any means, but certainly not the heights that FromSoft has seen in the past. Justin, have you watched any reviews on this? Like, do you feel any way about this?
Yeah. I guess the easiest way for, like, my review about this is once the reviews came out, it proved that I should never play this game.
I was also like, I'm going to not. I think.
Yeah.
Unless I can get this for like 15, 20 bucks, like, I'm probably just not going to try this.
And like, the thing that, like, kind of, like, scared me away from it is, like, leading up to it, they kept saying how, like, playing single player is a completely viable game. It's a viable way to play this. In actuality, it is not a viable way to play this.
Every review is like, do not do that.
Right.
Like,
right.
Oh my gosh, do not do that.
It's to the point, too, and I think they recently released a couple of changes, if I'm correct, for single player, but they're not, like, significant changes to help with some of the difficulty problems and overall just the issues with playing single player, which mostly, from what I hear, is the issues come from the fact that you don't get revives or lives in the game. So if you're playing it yourself, you're automatically at a significant disadvantage because you can't revive yourself, and plus many of the boss encounters have been cleverly created to maximize a three-person type of format for battling these end-of-run bosses, that if you're doing it yourself, you're just not having the same experience. And with insta-death on some of these things, it kind of sucks to be playing alone when you have already no margin for error.
Yes, 100%. And, like, I also just don't want to play online with people when I'm playing a game like this, because also, because this game seems like you are really depending on your teammates.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like, people play FromSoft games so differently, right? Like, there are so many different ways that people play these games. And, like, if you are the kind of person who is maybe, like, not as active with combat and things like that, it just seems like you are going to have to either play with people you know or just accept that the matchmaking might not work for you. And I don't have anyone I know that wants to play this. So,
yeah.
And I don't know. It's not that I don't want to play this, but, like, I would love to play this with you and whoever else. But at the end of the day, like, is that how I want to enjoy a FromSoft game like this? Like, not really, you know?
And like, you and I, like, I like Elden Ring a lot. I platinumed it. We're at different skill levels when it comes to this. Like,
you think so?
Yes, absolutely. Like, I would say, like, the reason I like Elden Ring is because you can just, like, grind and level up to a fact where the game becomes kind of easy, that you can just power through it. And I don't necessarily rely on my skill in the same way that I think other people can. Like, I've watched you play these games before. You're good at them. You, like, you're good.
Oh, thanks.
Well, but like, I mean, but like, we both beat Elden Ring.
Yeah.
But like, just because we beat Elden Ring does not mean you put us in a lobby together, we are going to do well at Night Rain for various reasons.
Yes, 100%. And that is also the reason why, like, the idea of, like, matchmaking with people for me, I'm like, oh, no thanks. Like, it's not that I think I'm so good, but it just makes me go, I don't know.
Yeah, I think there's some interesting ideas in here that I think there could have been a really cool single player element to this that would have been really fun. Yeah, if they just made it like you did runs and you could be these characters that have pre-made stats and movesets and things like that. Not stats, I guess, because you can up, like, level yourself up. But, like, you weren't constrained by time in the same way, and you weren't constrained by starting necessarily over every single day the same way. It could have been really fun to play a game like this in this format to get a little boost of, like, Elden Ring every once in a while to, like, have your character do your build, make your build on the fly, pick your items and weapons on the fly, and then try to get to the end of it with whatever build you made. But the way this is, like, you're putting so many different genres together, and you're taking a hard game in a hard genre, trying to get people together, which is another hard thing to do, to play high-skilled games like this. And it's just not, it doesn't create a formula that is accessible to us. But I even think people who like this game find it difficult probably to play this game.
That's what I've seen from a lot of people who, like, reviewed it, saying, like, I had a great team because I got to play with my friends who had this, but, like, doing, like, anytime I tried to do it not with them, it was like, oh no.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Yeah.
And it's not to say that, you know, people are bad necessarily, but it's just like there's a level of commitment that I think you all have to have on something like this that it's just going to be difficult to lock people down when you know, obviously when you're reviewing a game like this, it becomes a priority. But, like, between you and me, like, are we going to make Elden Ring Night Rain a priority in our lives? Like,
no,
probably not.
And,
you know,
and there are ways. There's co-op. You can play co-op in Elden Ring.
Yeah, there's like it's limited in, like, the console versions. There's, like, mods for
PC,
making it better on PC.
Yeah.
But yeah, 100%. Like I would probably just rather do something like that.
What's harder, playing Night Rain or modding Elden Ring to play with someone? Probably. Yeah. Ooh, that's a tough one, actually.
But, like, to me, like, thinking about, like, playing a modded version of Elden Ring, I'm like, that probably sounds preferable.
Yeah.
It's
taken at your own pace and stuff. And
exactly.
I feel like there's enough challenge in that game to play with someone and still get some benefit from it.
100%. So, yeah, I don't know. Like, I might. Like I said, I would play this for $20. And luckily, these games go on sale. This is also, I think, $40 or $50. A lot of the reviews also said, like, hey, just see, like, it is clear why this is not full priced, which is cool for them to do and acknowledge and whatever. I'd play this for $20 just to give it a shot. Because I am, like, interested in its concept a little bit, but I'm not going to pay full price for this, especially not right now when there's plenty of other things to play. I did see someone talking about, like, this makes me a little nervous about their next game, which is the Dusk Bloods, which is a PvPvE game on the Switch 2, if you remember. And this FromSoft is so, like, interested in doing, like, multiplayer, but it seems like they kind of don't want to do multiplayer or don't, like, understand it particularly well yet. So I understand the trepidation for that. I think we'll still have to see more of that game to know, like, what it is and, like, what the PvPvE stuff is. Because if you think about it, like, there is PvP stuff in all Souls games, you know, like that's been in them from Demon Souls, but obviously that's not the focus, but I don't know. We'll see.
Well, I think to that, every time, like I know, like I don't know when Duskbloods is coming out necessarily. Do they have a date next year?
2026.
2026.
Yeah.
I would assume that even if they have the base core gameplay loop, they are going to learn a lot from this game to inform what they will do with their next primarily multiplayer PvPvE game enough to know things about like, okay, we got to do something about the balancing for single player, or we got to do something about like allowing people to do duos or something like that. Like I would hope they're learning from this and it's a learning experience. And again, an 80, a Metacritic score, open critic score of 80. It's still a good game. People still like it. It is still FromSoft game. But I feel like it's just not, Elden Ring is such a mainstream game that I don't think this one is going to hit the mainstream crowd in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
So.
100%. This is like, I don't think this can be the mainstream follow-up to Elden Ring.
Right.
But I don't think that they were trying to do that. You know what I mean? Like, this is not the follow-up to Elden Ring. This is just like kind of a spin-off side thing.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, did you see they're doing a movie?
Oh, no. Who's starring in it? Ben Starr?
They've got Alex Garland is directing it. He made Ex Machina and Annihilation, and he wrote Judge Dredd and 28 Days Later and Civil War. Didn't you see that, or did you not? I feel like we talked about it.
It's great. Yeah, it's great.
That's him, which I don't know. Maybe I've soured on video game adaptations, but not that I was ever particularly sweet on them.
Ooh, on the Elden Ring Reddit, this is the just / Elden Ring, so who knows what it is. This is the movie cast that they want. You tell me when we should stop here. They say Tom Holland as the Tarnished.
Yep, good.
Yep, the guy who doesn't talk. Zendaya as Ronnie, yeah.
Yep, that's good. She's the blue lady, the blue witch lady. That's good. I like that.
Bella Ramsey as Melina.
Mm-hmm. It's good. Good.
Pedro Pascal as Radagon.
Yeah, sure. That seems about right.
Beyonce as Merica.
Mm-hmm.
And Samuel L. Jackson as Godwin.
Oh, good. Yeah, no, I think that's all. I think that's all 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. 10 out of 10 notes.
When are they going to announce that Tom Holland is playing Link in the Zelda movie?
Well, you heard the rumors about
Hunter Schafer.
Yeah. And people are losing their fucking mind.
Two things about this. Me and Elena were talking about this. Thing one, of course, people are going to lose their minds over trans people, whatever. Obviously, it doesn't matter. But Elena and I were like questioning, like, I've never seen her in anything. I know she's on Euphoria. I know Hideo Kojima likes her, and she's in one of his 7 projects that he's got going on. But my question is, like, other than money, so I guess maybe there you go. But like, other than money, why would you be in the Legend of Zelda movie? It's going to be bad, right? I can see an animated version of a movie like that, like in the same vein as like the Mario movie doing okay and being like fine enough in the way that the Mario movie is like fine. But like if live action is I don't see this going well. I don't see it.
Well, I think it's one of those. It really does depend. Like I would not, let's go back to Fallout. Would you have expected Fallout to be a critical success? I would not have, you know, like
I think that has a better chance than Zelda, in my opinion.
Oh,
here's the thing. If you were saying, okay, we're going to adapt Fallout 4 into a video game, and be like, eh, into a movie, I'd be like, eh, I don't know. But, or a TV show, rather, sorry. But the fact that they're like, you know, it's its own thing. It's just its own, like, bottled story in the same way that all Fallout games and all Fallout media is just a bottled story, you know? To me, that makes a lot more sense.
It's a better world than having, like, specific characters that you know, like Zelda, who we all know for being so chatty in all the video games.
Well, but that's what I'm saying, too. Like, okay, so you're going to have someone as Link, and, like, they're going to just talk? He's just going to talk a bunch? You know what I'm saying? Or
though Pedro Pascal as Ganondorf, I'm
no,
down.
It's bad.
I am,
no, it's bad.
I am
Idris
down
Elba
with
or nothing.
That. I am down with a Pedro Pascal. I like to see him playing a mustache twirling villain who's very charming, is finds his way into Hyrule. Everyone's like, oh, that guy, he looks evil. That hair, that, you know, he just doesn't look like he's a very good guy. But like, boy, is he charming. And then sure enough, comes out of nowhere.
Comes out of nowhere, huh?
Oh, man. Did you ever watch the scene from Game of Thrones with the
where
mountain?
Gets his head
and yeah, did you ever see that?
In? Oh,
yeah.
I've seen it.
Yeah. I watched that today. And I was reminded how gruesome that was.
pretty bad. But it's so funny seeing him so young.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because not that he's like particularly old, but just like seeing him like without the salt and pepper, you know, and his beard and whatever. It's like, oh, yeah. Oh, no.
Well, I mean, are we looking at age Joel? Or the young Joel.
I'm just like, in my mind, like, I see Pedro Pascal in my head.
They call him Zaddy Joel. What, Zaddy?
I don't know what a Zaddy is.
It's like a...
But, like, a, I, like, I get... I don't know what the Z
Zaddy
is.
What?
That's what I'm saying. What's the difference between a Zaddy and a Zaddy? I don't know.
A Zaddy, a sexually attractive male, especially an older one who is fashionable or charismatic. Zaddy versus Daddy. There must be a difference here. Oh, okay. Daddy is a common term for a father, while Zaddy is a more recent slang term.
Is it?
Yeah, that's what it means, I guess. Gotta love that. Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. Justin, I'm going to save us. Next game in the Metacritic roundup is To a T. This is the latest game from... what's his name? I'm forgetting his name. The guy who made Katamari Damacy and Watam, maybe? Is that what it's called? Katamari Damacy.
I don't want to just start guessing.
Takahashi. Keita Takahashi.
Is that where the T comes from? To a Takahashi?
In Keita and Takahashi, yeah. So this is To a T. This game is his latest game. On the PlayStation 5, it scored a 70. It's unscored on the Xbox Series X, and they scored a 74 on the PC. Justin, I have played To a T.
Oh.
And I have some thoughts about it. Have you heard about this game at all?
I have not. I'm pulling up video footage right now.
So here's the pitch. It is like a little adventure game broken into 8 episodes. It takes about 5 or 6 hours to finish, depending on what you do. About a boy, a 13-year-old boy, who is physically unable to stop T posing. You know what I mean? So he's like just like shaped like a T, and his life has all sorts of little things that help accommodate his arms. He can't put his arms down or like move them that much, so he has to like bend his body like to get through doors and stuff like that. He has like a long spoon that he eats his cereal with in the morning, and like he has sinks that he's able to like, it's like he's like a modded sink that his mom made. Basically it's a little adventure game where you like run around a little town and then you go to school and wacky hijinks ensues. It's got like a lot of like the Animal Crossing like blah, 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 like sound effects when like all the characters talk. It's set in Japan, it's cute. And I would 100% say that these reviews are accurate. I would say, yep, 70. I would get a 70 is about where I would say this should go. And the reason for that, I've played 3 or 4, I don't remember, of the episodes in the game, and I think I'm done with it. And the reason for that is because I'm not the target demographic of this video game.
What is the target demographic?
This is a game for children.
And I
don't mean that.
Oh my
that
god, that dog is so cute.
You do have a dog helper who helps you out because you need assistance doing a lot of things in your life because you can't put your arms down. It is very, very much aimed at children. And that's not to say it's not of high quality. It's just that it's not something that is particularly engaging for me. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah. It's like
boy goes to school and gets bullied because of his arms, because he can't put his arms down. Like, okay, sure. Like that is like the end. That is the entirety of the first episode. You know what I mean? I'm like, okay, there's no characters, 'cause it's just like very simple. Like, does that kind of make sense? Like there's not a lot for me personally to latch on to. I think if I had a small child who wanted to play video games, they would get a kick out of this.
Well, I'm also getting a kick out of it because I love this dog, and every little bit I'm watching of it, all I see is this little dog. I do have to say, when I was trying to pull up B-roll for this as you were talking, there's not a single Let's Play of this on the YouTube that I could find.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's not a particularly popular game, right? I mean, it has 4 user ratings on Metacritic. I think this game is coasting a lot off of the name recognition from Takahashi, right? Like, of course. But like everything that he has done after Katamari Damacy and like that whole series has been smaller games, you know what I mean? That have released to maybe less acclaim and stuff like that. Yeah. There is not there like I would say that this is not something that adults will get a whole lot out of just because, like I said, it is really simple. That doesn't mean it's not a good game. It's just I think it's just good at doing what it's doing for its audience. At least I would assume it's the kind of game that if I was, you know, 5 through 9, maybe 5 through 11, I would have loved, I bet, and played a bunch of and explored the little town and all that. The story is about how he discovers he can fly by spinning around really fast, which is very adorable. But it's not something that's particularly engaging for like adults, really. Does it make sense?
Okay. Yeah. Hey, just that's not the right game for you.
Yeah. And so like if I went into this being like, well, oh my gosh, the next, you know, Keita Takahashi game is like coming out, I can't wait to play it. And I sat down, I'm like, what is this? It's like, oh. Like there's like musical interludes in it. Do you know what I mean? Like there's a bunch of musical interludes in it that are like very like children TV show kind of like feeling. Does that make sense?
I'm saying there is a space in the world for you to create a Let's Play of this.
Oh, I could be the only one, huh?
You could be the first.
I could be the first. It's cute. It's just not something that I would say like, oh, you should go out and play.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although I believe it is on it might be on PS Plus and Game Pass, but I don't know. Here's like a quick review. Oh, that's actually kind of long. Doesn't matter. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's good for kids. Good for people who are interested in like maybe non-traditional. Like, it's unique. It's weird, but not for me.
I think to a T, it's really to a Trix, because Trix are for kids.
Trix are for kids, and to a T.
Silly Wabbit. Is it Silly Rabbit? Trix are for kids?
That is what they say.
And then Elmer Fudd says, Silly Wabbit, right? Does he say that? Or is that like a
I think
Mandela
he says,
effect?
Witten up, Wabbit. Say your fucking prayers. And then he shoots him, I think. That might have been...
Yeah, that's how it would really go.
That was my Porky Pig impression. Oh gosh, they're from fucking Last of Us. Justin, you play more Clair Obscur?
So I got to the end of Act 1, and they do things in that moment that are pretty good. I really like an interesting thing, huh? I think one of the I want to say an issue with the game is that it's so much more interesting when there's humans you're interacting with.
Yes, I agree.
And there's so much of it that you're dealing with these what are those stupid things called? The wood creatures that you whatever. The mythical creatures
where they have like the masks
yeah,
and
whatever
the
they are
fluff things yes
yeah and like I the game is so much better specifically like in cutscenes and like just the drama of it when you're having the humans talk with each other
yes I agree
so I just kind of wish there's more of that. I'm assuming like they kind of hint that there is like more of that potentially out there to a certain degree but like the world that they created and like the Paris alike place that's being attacked by this Grimage at the beginning of the game is just such an interesting world setup that I just wish we had more of that world a little bit or more of these like hybrid worlds with like modern day with this like kind of like beautiful fantasy world and stuff like that. But it's one of those games that I think the joy of it is that when it if there's something that's too hard, usually you can get through it through talent and persistence. Mm-hmm. And a lot of RPGs, it's not like that. If there's a boss that you get to, you have to grind to beat that boss. And while there's still the ability to grind and level yourself up to make things easier, this one you don't have to grind to get to that. By just playing the game, you're going to be pretty much progressing with the story and being able to accomplish things. There's still bosses that are tougher, obviously, that are like, you do like a bunch of damage on it and their health doesn't even move. And you're like, all right, I can never beat you right now.
Yes.
But I think like... a skill check in this game is the end of act one boss that you kind of get to. Cause it's like one of the time that they introduce these new mechanics. I don't know if it's like a spoiler. It's the one with the lamps on it. Right.
Yep.
And it's like a tougher boss just in terms of like being able to beat it. And like, you can't just beat it unless you learn how to parry, dodge or whatever. And they also like introduce some other cool mechanics in there that you have to kind of learn about a little bit, but it is like this little bit of a skill check. But at the same time, it's like, if you just get good at your parrying, you're going to beat that boss without having to like maximize your damage and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I really do like the whole system of your upgrades and your abilities and using the Pictos and like having those things and being able to really customize your characters. Cause I'm starting to get into the world where I'm like, all right, this character's like strength is when I mark things and then attack it. So I'm going to like have a bunch of Pictos on this character's focus specifically on marking my enemies. And then other ones I'm like, well, you're primarily a healer. So I'm going to make sure that I'm just using support things that help with your healing. And I don't know. I think it's a pretty interesting thing that's never become overwhelming to me in terms of managing all the systems.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's a game I want to go back to. I have not. I've been kind of busy with other stuff. But the thought of going back to it, I'm like, I ended basically like this. The stuff happens at the end of Act One, and I was like, cool, great, I'll be back to this later, and then it's never did. And it, like the thought of going back to it now, I'm like, oh gosh, like there's so much stuff I got to remember. And like, I'm going to be introducing new characters and I bet they're going to join my party and like whatever else.
Oh, you literally ended at the end.
Literally, I got control of the characters like at the campfire. And I was like, well, that was it for the night. And I was like, that's it. So I don't know. So like the thought of like sitting down and like, oh, I bet there's like 45 minutes of shit I got to learn and whatever. It just like kind of like has turned me off. But it's not because I dislike the game. It's just because I'm being a baby. You know what I mean? Are you continuing to like it, it sounds like?
Yeah. I'm not like, I haven't really had a bunch of time to like go and like sit down and like play it, but I think I will complete this game. And if I ever get to a place where there is like a skill check where I just can't dodge enough, I have no shame in putting the difficulty down. But right now I'm still staying at the general, the average, middle difficulty, the standard, whatever they call it. But if it does get to a point where I just like, I can't right now, I will probably move it down when I get near the end of the game. Some good stuff to it. One thing I really did like was when you have a party of more than three, you can only have three active people at a time.
Oh, yes.
When your party gets wiped, you have an option to continue the expedition with whoever is remaining in your party. And as of now, I'm assuming by the end of it, you'll probably have six playable characters. That's my guess. Right now I only have one additional, like four. So they bring it in, and there was this fight I was doing, just like an overworld fight, kind of like a mini boss, and wiped my party, had about a third of their health left, and I'm like, ah, fuck. But then I like perfect parried and like survived long enough with that one character to end up beating that encounter with my remaining party member. And I was like, fuck yeah, I did it. And it felt really good and satisfying. But that's kind of the game, because like that game can suddenly overwhelming odds. If you are on it enough, you can turn that around really quickly. It can also happen the other way. Like I was doing something once where I was fighting some people that kept like giving shields to other people. And I think this one had like nine shields on it. And I was like, I can't beat you. Cause every turn they got like three more. I was like, I don't think I'll ever be able to beat you. But like, I really am enjoying the combat style of this a lot, because I cannot think of a game that has ever really played quite like this. And for them to do something in this genre that is new and refreshing, I think is pretty awesome.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's cool that this has picked up the steam it has, and I'm excited to see what they do next. I've been playing Death Stranding, Justin. And I don't know much to say about it that I haven't said already, other than I like it very much. I like it very, very much, in fact.
When we talked last, you were liking it. You didn't say that you liked it very, very much. What kind of changed over for you to start to like, not only is this a game you're enjoying, it's a game that you really, really like?
You just, you pick up your order and then you look at the stuff you've got in your inventory and you're like, well, shit, I'm going to need new boots. So you make some new boots and you're like, ah, I should recycle the old boots. And then you make your route and you're like, okay, well, I'm going to have to keep my eyes peeled for anything kind of shifty going on when we get to the river, because I gotta make sure that I don't just like fall over in the river, right? So like maybe we're not gonna stick with the route 100%. Like I love a game about planning, and you're just planning it all, and then you go and execute it, and it's fun. And like I get that like a lot of people did not fuck with this because it is like people like joke about like, oh, it's like a mailman simulator, or it's like just a walking simulator, but like it's so fun to just like to like think really hard about the environment. You know what I mean? Like that is a game that. We talk a lot about like open world games that kind of don't not deserve to have an open world, but like open world games where like the open world doesn't really matter, you know? And like this is a game that like the open world is so important because you are like looking at every single detail and you're like making sure that you're like, okay, well, I'm actually going to walk just fully around these rocks because I just don't want to even risk it, you know?
But and you can tell that like, when they designed these maps, it wasn't just like we're gonna put mountains here and stuff like that. Like the way they design the maps themselves create obstacles in a way that sometimes they make trips take you longer because you're going around. Other times there's an obstacle that you can build a bridge to make it easier to cross or do something else in that to make it easier to cross. And there's so many ways to solve the problems too. But I think at the end of the day, the reason why it's fun to solve those problems is because the world design is actually very intentional for the task that you have to do. What do you think of the story? So the gameplay you're liking, story.
It's interesting. So I've gotten to chapter 3 or 4. So I've played about 15 hours total. And so I'm in a chapter where like I learned a lot about Fragile and like sort of her backstory about like how she accidentally delivered bombs for terrorists and she didn't know. But then when she found out, she tried to like stop it and like all this stuff. But like her company has been like defamed basically because of all of that. Thought that was very interesting. I like the characters. I like Sam as a main character because he's someone who doesn't want to be involved with the plot. And I think that's an interesting guy. You know what I mean? About like someone who like, I just want to do the job. I don't care. I don't want to be involved with this. I just want to do my job, but he keeps getting roped back in. And there's all sorts of like intrigue and things like that.
Why
and,
would that
but
be?
Why? I don't know.
But it like it is one of those stories that I think that it does what a Kojima game does well is it like leaves all these cool breadcrumbs and like just there's intrigue around every corner and it is such a character based game. But at the end of the day, all these characters have this weird interconnected web of reasons why they're there and that the story starts to unfold in a really interesting way. And considering a majority of this game is the cutscenes are just a lot of times end goals to things that you do. They're not so much like things that you're just playing through. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like it's also cool too, like it's cool to play a game where like combat is not the focus.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where like there is combat in it and like you do engage with that kind of like I got a gun that shoots like a rope that like ties up dudes, which I think is fun, you know? But like the combat is not what the game is about. And maybe it gets that way eventually, but like it makes you want to think about engaging with enemies and stuff like that. I'm like, okay, well, what do you do if you get caught? Or like, do you just like drive right past everyone? Or do you like try and sneak past everyone? Or do you take everyone out? You know, it's cool. I like it a lot.
Yeah. Great game. I'm really looking forward to the second one.
Speaking of which, do you see everyone's like tweeting about today? Like, codes for the game went out today and everyone's like saying like they have it and when embargoes are.
When are embargoes?
And like, 3 weeks. At the end of the month. Does that ever bother you? Like, I always feel not bother, like the lowest level irritated when like it feels like it's just like that like influencer hype like culture of like I've got the game, I'm reviewing it, look forward to my thing at this time.
Well, I think obviously there is that like culture behind it, but I think this to me is a healthy thing because you're not forcing people to play the game in unrealistic circumstances. They have 3 weeks 100%. To play this game before it comes out. Plus, they had a hefty preview period beforehand where people are able to like not only play it for a lot of time in a couple days, but then kind of really like sit with it and then play it again a second time to like really understand like how the game changes and progresses for them. So like, while yes, I do think it is annoying to people to get this and kind of hold it over you to a certain thing, I think ultimately it's going to give us better reviews and people are going to be able to talk about it in a more healthy way than doing that. Cause I can think this game would be terrible if you played it in 3 days.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm 100% on board of like every game needs to be in the hands of people earlier. And the fact that they knew that, hey, we've got a big game, let's give you a whole month for it.
Awesome.
That's awesome. That's great. But it's the thing for me where I'm just like, the hype around like I've got the game, you know, and I get it, it's part of like PR marketing whatever, but like I don't know, that just makes me feel weird.
Well, you know what, you should just put on your newly made boots and you should walk all the way to that other place.
I guess I should
drop off whatever you had, get another task, and then come back.
Yeah, it's a good game. I like it a lot. And also, like I'm saying too, by the way, like I said, like 1% irritated at that, at like the influencer hype, whatever. It's just like, I just see it. I'm like, I don't know. And I get it. It's cool to have something that no one else has, but also like,
Well, a lot of these people make a living on
hype,
the hype, instead of actually like, you know, reviewing it. And
yeah. Also, Kojima said, in addition to that A24 live action movie that that A24 is doing, there's going to be a Death Stranding anime. He didn't say what or how or whatever, but
it's going to be like,
interesting.
It's going to be like all the scenes from Dragon Ball Z when they're charging the spirit bombs. Like half the episodes is going to be like a very slow build.
Isn't it weird though? Like, I get why people would want that because of how cinematic a lot of that game is. However, my question is like, don't you think that like the delivering stuff is like such a big part of that game?
I think you can still do it. Like, obviously, like it's going to be different, right? You're going to be adapting the game to like an anime style of it. But I think one of the cool things is that as you're going through this thing, you keep meeting these interesting different characters. And the first game is much more about connecting just the country. And like, it's very like singular with the people that you meet. The sequel, you do have like this crew that you're with. And there is a lot more like talking to people and being around more people than it just being like delivering it to one solemn COVID hut and then going to another one. So I think there are ways for it to work in a quite interesting way. Like you meet someone random along the path or whatever, but, and then plus you could also have your, continuing with before the zaddy daddy thing, when you're literally having your dad and the baby, and then you can decide if they're a daddy or a zaddy, along the way.
Do you have what?
Your baby? Sam Porter Bridges?
Is it the baby? I know he has the baby, but like,
don't you rock the baby when it's crying to shut it up?
Is that what you're supposed to do?
Yeah.
Okay, then no, but I should. Okay, good to know. I look at it when I'm in the room. I like poke at it.
Yeah.
I'm like, hey, what's going on there? I'm like,
yeah. If it's like irritated and it's like losing stuff when you're out in the world, you take it out and like kind of rock it to make it feel better.
Okay, I did it one time when it tutorialized it, but I didn't understand what that did. Okay. Heard. I will do that.
Heard, chef.
Justin, here's the news. All right. Where do we even start with the layoffs? I think, like, the first thing, let's talk about Black Panther. So EA canceled its upcoming Black Panther game and just fully shut down the studio that was working on it, Cliffhanger Games, which I don't think has published. I don't think has developed anything. It was made of like a lot of names from Monolith and other industry vets. But it seems like they are shutting down a lot of their projects right now that are not their like big live service things. Things like like Apex Legends, obviously, their EA Sports stuff, which is a different division, but you know, obviously that is a big moneymaker for them, The Sims. This is such a bummer. This is such a bummer that they shut down this game. What do you think of this? Other than just like, fuck, this sucks.
I mean, I think it does suck, but like, it's one of those things that there's two things kind of happening here. This game feels like it was the game of chasing trends at the time. It was announced at the height of Marvel. It is with a studio with ex Monolith developers who are trying to get this Nemesis system down. And I think just part of it, I wonder how much of this is people having a vision versus people trying to get a licensed property out there.
I know what you're saying. Like, to me, I do not... I don't think that EA is canceling games because of quality issues.
Well, I want to be clear. That's not what I'm saying either.
Okay.
I'm saying that when you are like a team, like a smaller team, a solidified publisher or a solidified studio, and you want to make a game and you're going to put your passion and heart into this game, it's a very different experience than when big company says, we have these properties, we want you to make this game, because they're having the big publisher trying to set these benchmarks rather than having the studio create this game.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but do you think that impacted, like, is a part of why this game was shut down?
I think to a degree, because EA wants money and EA wants things to happen quicker because it's a bigger publisher. And if a game is going to truly take a while to make, I don't think they have patience, or many people have patience at this point, to put into a game that they might need more years than they're hoping for. And what's cheaper, create a Concord or cancel the game?
Right. Like at a certain point, like if it's not coming together, or if it's just taking time. Yeah. I don't know. To me also, like, not to put too much of a tinfoil hat on here either. Like, I do think the optics of this are bad. Do you know what I mean? Of like canceling a Black Panther game sort of in the era that we're in terms of like all of these companies that have been like rolling back the initiatives that they've been sort of like leaning on and enforcing for the past like 5 years or so, just because, presidential things have changed. I'm not saying that that's why it is, but I do think the optics are bad. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I can see that. Like, I don't disagree, but like, I would say that all of that stuff aside, movies like Black Panther and Black Panther, the character himself, is such a popular character that it is like something that has like commercial and critical success behind it. But that doesn't mean, like, again, EA is a company that goes in and is like, all right, we're gonna make a Black Panther game. And that's where I kind of coming back to this. Like, was it Cliffhanger Games wanting to make a Black Panther game, or EA telling like, we want
saying,
you,
like, oh, this is hot right now.
This is hot right now. We want you to make a Black Panther game. Oh yeah. And the Nemesis system, you're putting it in there. You know what I mean? Like, then it just becomes like you're making a formula rather than creating a game with a unique idea from the start, which was what I think why Shadow of Mordor was such a great game, because that felt like, let's take this Lord of the Rings property and create something new and unique with it rather than just trying to put popular things together. Not that Lord of the Rings is not popular, but
no, I know what you mean. Yeah. I agree where like, I don't think that is necessarily why. I think it's probably more to just like the idea of them saying like, oh, this isn't trending like it was 4 years ago. And it's like, well, yeah.
It could retrend again if we release the game. Maybe
That's the thing though, is that like, I look at this and I'm like, I think a Black Panther game would be a fucking hit. Like, you know what I mean? Like also like everything I've heard about this, I'm like, oh, this sounds cool. Like, it's using the Nemesis system, which I thought was only going to be allowed to be used by WB. Apparently not. This game had that in there. Like, everything I hear about this, I'm like, this sounded sick as fuck. Like, I don't know. I think this is such a bummer, and for the entire studio to just be shut down, I think just sucks.
Yeah.
So speaking of studios shutting down and things, People Can Fly They developed Outriders from a few years back, if you can remember.
And Bulletstorm. Don't forget Bulletstorm.
Excuse me, Bulletstorm. Let me read you this bit from an IGN article by Vicky Blake. People Can Fly, the Polish studio best known for Outriders and the Gears of War Judgment, and Bulletstorm, has confirmed even more jobs are at risk as it cancels two projects, Project Gemini and Project Bifrost. Today, we've made a very difficult decision to suspend the development of Project Gemini and Project Bifrost. The relevant current reports have been released to the market. Their CEO wrote a statement. The suspension of the Gemini project is a consequence of the fact that the publisher has not presented us with a draft of the subsequent content rider to the publishing agreement covering the terms and conditions of further milestone on Project Gemini, and the lack of communication from the publisher as its willingness to continue or terminate the Gemini project. This is Square Enix, I believe.
Yes, because it is.
Square Enix published Outriders, and yeah, this is Square Enix. So basically, they're just saying, like, we are canceling these projects because we do not know if we have funding for them anymore, which I think is a huge shame. And I think it makes Square Enix look really bad. And I don't think there have been layoffs, or have there? Oh, yeah, we have significantly just scaled down our teams. Yeah. So there have been layoffs. Unclear exactly how many that is, but that is a bummer. What do you think about this?
I think, like, one of the things here to think about is the fuck is happening with Square Enix as a
weird
as a publisher here. Like, I mean, it goes off to, like, right now, like, you have them making still Final Fantasy, correct? Like, they did Rebirth,
yeah, of
right?
course.
And they were in that, they were the developers of that too, and they published a lot of this other stuff. It feels like them as a publisher is becoming problematic. I mean, they sold off half their games that were popular in the like West. Like, didn't they sell off Tomb Raider, and then they sell off other things too?
Yeah, they sold off that whole studio, Crystal Dynamics. So Montreal, Eidos Montreal.
So, like, I think part of this is just becoming, maybe they're not that great of a developer anymore. Like, right now, a publisher anymore. Right now, in 2025, the games that they have released, Saga Frontier 2 Remaster, that was in March, Dragon Quest 1 and 2 HD 2D Remake, that was in October, and those are the only things this year that they have published, and those weren't even developed by Square Enix. So I don't know. It's just it's very scary for this. As someone who loves Final Fantasy a lot, like, where's the future of this? What's the future going to be of Kingdom Hearts? Is that going to be something we ever get to see?
I don't know. I'm not laughing at that. I'm just like the idea of like. What about Kingdom Hearts? It just makes me laugh. It's legit, though. It is. I don't know. I think those are good questions about, like, what are they doing? I think I have to imagine that they are trying to refocus themselves on, like, figuring out what to do about their games, because they have just always been disappointed in the performance of they have just been so, like, disappointed recently with the performance of all their stuff. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And, like, on top of that, like, the thing from the People Can Fly update that worries me is they literally call out the publisher for having bad communication and not getting the from the publisher as to its willingness to continue to terminate the project. Like, the lack of communication is why they have to make this choice. And I can bet you these people at People Can Fly were not just passively, like, sending an email and being like, oh, I hope we hear back from them. Like, they were probably knowing that they've canceled this project because of this lack of communication. They probably were trying to reach out. They've named the publisher as the problem. Like, to me, that is just something that is a bad look for Square Enix, and it's a bad look for what's happening for them in the future as a publisher and perhaps even as a developer.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Unclear how many jobs have been lost here, but some at the very least, which sucks.
Yeah.
Here's something interesting. So High Res is the studio behind the game Smite and Smite 2, which is popular, to my understanding. It's like a multiplayer. I think it's MOBA, maybe. Mm-hmm. And Paladins, which is in like Overwatch-esque kind of game, first-person shooter type thing. It's got a card deck building system, though. Let me just read you this tweet here from Dexterdo. Smite and Paladins dev Hi-Rez just laid off executives and senior staff to keep Smite 2 alive. Hi-Rez chose their devs over execs, with no core Smite 2 devs being affected by these layoffs. So I think this is kind of interesting. They laid off some of their like executive people to keep the jobs of the people who are doing the work around, which I think is really interesting and kind of uncommon. I mean, very uncommon for the current industry. What do you think?
Yeah, it's interesting, obviously, because like the studio saying that they've kept devs over the other people. So like there's clearly enough people at the top that they could cut to like save some of the money to keep developing the game. And both these games have been out for a while. So like, what do you need other than like from the up top people, other than, you know, a couple of people in the seats to approve things at a certain point. So mm-hmm. like the people who are like working on this, the ones that are the ones like doing the updates and making sure everything is balanced and like working, those are the people that you need to be in there. And it's great that they chose those people over the execs who got laid off from that stuff. So like, I think it's a cool thing. I don't know how likely this is to happen in other situations and stuff like that. It's not like EA is going to be like, well, I mean, we're just going to get rid of one of our senior VPs so we can keep this Black Panther game going, because it's just not a realistic thing for companies to make those choices. But certainly, I think this stands out as news because this is something that for this case and these games, they chose the devs over the executives, which is kind of cool.
Yes, 100%. And you're totally right. Like the EA executives are not looking around being like, I think some of us should be laid off. I think this comes from a different sort of circumstance and different ways companies are run and stuff like that. But I don't know. It was notable at the very least. Speaking of executives who should be laid off, what's that?
I forget. When was this the Wii U performance when Iwata and other people like cut their salary down?
Yes.
Like, I think that was a cool thing that they did. I don't think that happens at Nintendo in 2025.
It would. Because they did not do that. They did not volunteer to do that.
It's a law, right? It's like a
yes. As fun as it is for us to be like, oh, Iwata was so nice, because it sounds like by all accounts he was, it is law for them to do that.
Well, we need more of those laws.
I agree. And like again, that doesn't mean he wasn't a nice guy. Do you know what I mean? Like again, by all accounts, it sounds like he was delightful. But
yeah.
So here's a last little bit of layoff news from Tom Warren on Twitter. I don't think that there needs to be. I don't think we need to read his article or anything like this. But just read you this tweet from him. Microsoft is laying off another 305 people in Redmond, Washington today after laying off more than 6,000 employees last month. So they have laid off like, I think, shy of 10,000 people over the past like 2 years.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Wasn't Nintendo's old headquarters in Redmond, Washington, too?
I think it was.
And did they close that down?
Nintendo of America. I don't know.
I don't think they're in Redmond, Washington anymore.
It'd be a weird coincidence, huh?
Yeah, it just must be something of that town.
Something about it is just very video game-y.
Yeah, that's where it is located. I don't know if it's still there or not, but yeah, it's in Redmond, Washington, where Nintendo headquarters is. Yeah, crazy.
So, I mean, like, I don't think these are all, like, games jobs, but it is just, like, irritating, right?
Yeah.
It's just, like,
more people.
I mean, 10,000, like I said, like, it's, like, I don't think it's quite 10,000 yet, so I'm not trying to, like, say that number, but it is over, it's over 8,000 that they laid off in the past 2 years. That is a fucking lot of people for a company worth $3 trillion.
Yeah. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. So that's a shame. So that's the end of our little layoff corner. Justin, you want to talk about a canceled Wolfenstein game?
Is that the same as a layoff?
No, not quite.
Okay.
So people have discovered that someone who worked on... let me read you this LinkedIn job description. I don't know who this is. on LinkedIn, but it doesn't really matter here. They are they've been at Machine Games for 7 years and 11 months. From March 2016 to January 2021, they were a senior environmental artist. From January 2021 to January 2022, they were an associate lead environmental artist. And then from February 2022 to January 2024, they were the lead artist on Indiana Jones and the Great Circle and a canceled, unannounced project. And a lot of people are saying, like, well, that was definitely Wolfenstein, huh? Because as someone who did some research on Wolfenstein recently, believe it or not, they did say that they were working on Wolfenstein 3 or in their reboot sort of series. They never mentioned it after 2018. So like it's that, you know, if they were working on this thing, it has been in the dark since for 7 years. So if this was a Wolfenstein game, sounds like it was canceled. It's a very common part of the industry of like unannounced games getting canceled whenever. I don't necessarily think Machine Games is in trouble based on the fact that it sounds like Indiana Jones was a pretty big hit. But people are out here saying like, oh, man, like crazy that there was some other game that they were working on, probably Wolfenstein, that just isn't happening anymore.
But like,
I wonder why.
What if it's funny that you should say that, but what if it was like a Youngblood situation? You know what I mean? Like something that like sorry if you're listening out there and you love Wolfenstein Youngblood, but like,
we don't have to,
but like, if it's like okay. One of those situations where they were trying to make something else off the shoulders of another game or something like that. But if they are not going to make another Wolfenstein game, which I think you are quite versed with, you're not shocked with.
I'll say this. I did get a lot of comments on that video, believe it or not. But there were some good comments or some people like challenging my ideas. And they're like, you're saying that like you can make games about hating Nazis today. Look at Sniper Elite. Look at Indiana Jones. I'm like, yes, but I think making a game about Nazi-controlled America now, I think, is different. I think it just feels different. And I think that game series also died because Wolfenstein Youngblood was such a flop. Do you know, like, I think there are a lot of reasons, and I'm not saying that that's the only reason, but my video is about like saying like here's one factor for why I think these games just couldn't exist anymore.
And I don't want to be that person too, but like, sometimes, like, just because you can make a new game doesn't mean you necessarily should make a new game, right? I think what stood out so much about the Wolfenstein reboot when that one came back out was that it was a game I was not expecting. And because I wasn't expecting it, it had that much more love for me as I played the game. The second one comes out, and it's not, like, entirely different, but I was expecting it to be more of what it was and have more of the narrative that it did and stuff like that. So like, do we need a third one? Need is the wrong term, but like, I think part of why I liked that so much was because of the novelty of it, and just beating it to death might not also be the way to go, unless they have a reason to make it.
I also think like how that game ends. Do you remember how the second game ends?
No.
So you, spoilers for Wolfenstein 2, you kill Frau Engel on national television, and then you sort of like, you and your crew like look into the camera and say like, now is our time to rise up and like fight back. And like, that's cool, but like, the idea of doing that in a video game sounds like, oh gosh, that's big. All of America, the game is set in all of America. You know what I mean? Like, it sounds too ambitious for me to really be on board with, unless I don't know. Oh. I mean, like, I would play it because I like those games a lot. I think they've got the juice, but
I'm hearing Halo 3 vibes.
Sure. I mean, like, you know what I mean? Like that is not unlike, oh shit, the Covenant are on Earth. All of it, all of Earth, you know? And also I think a problem too with that game's narrative is that it is, and this is something I kind of talk about in my video, but like, it points out that like, just because these people could take, like, there's a reason why these people were able to take over, and it's not because they did it entirely through force, you know, and it's through like, well, the regular people accept it, you know? And so like, if you were to be like, okay, well, now it's time to liberate America in a video game, how do you deal with that? You know what I mean? Like, how do you deal with that in a nuanced way? I don't know. I think you could do it. I just think it, like, to me, to what you're saying, like, to do a third game in there, I'm like, good luck. Like, this, good luck. This is really hard. But I don't know. It's not that I'm like, I think it's okay that if a game isn't working, cancel it. You know what I mean? Cancel it. That's okay. It sounds like people, like, we have not heard about any lost jobs. Maybe we have. They laid off 10,000 people. Microsoft did. But at least from the news of this, not, it wasn't even news. They didn't even announce the cancellation of this thing. But, like, from this, we have not heard much about it. So, Justin, Randy Pitchford.
Oh, we love him. We love him, right? He's the best guy. Bam. Best daddy out there. Or is he a zaddy?
He's not a zaddy, I'll tell you that much.
Based on this story, no, he's not.
Let me read you just this little Twitter exchange here. So Randy Pitchford out here quote tweeting Nintendo of America. There's a little video they did of Nintendo of America visiting Gearbox. Randy is wearing just the ugliest shirt I've ever fucking seen in my life. That's all them Hollywood bucks. that's you know what, Justin? That's what working with Craig Mazin gets you. He quote tweets this and says, I am so very excited for the Nintendo Switch 2, and I'm even more excited to bring Borderlands 4 to this incredible magical machine. And some guy responds, Randy, this game better not be $80. Don't take that risk. A lot of gamers aren't going to pay $80 and feed this notion of constant increase of price tag. You are the CEO. You have some say with the price when it comes to your publisher. Randy Pitchford says this, A, not my call. B, if you're a real fan, you'll find a way to make it happen. My local game store had Starflight for the Sega Genesis for $80 in 1991 when I was just out of high school working minimum wage at an ice cream parlor in Pismo Beach, and I found a way to make it happen. That sucks. That sucks. In general, what do you think about that? And then we can get to his response to this.
I get really angry when boomers, and I guess are these boomers or is this close to these boomers, right? These are the fucking boomers that ruin our life.
Pitchford?
Yeah, he's born in 1971. Is that a boomer?
No, that's Gen X.
Fine, Gen X. Gen X and boomers, they have this, I mean, it's that avocado toast argument, right? The reason why millennials and Gen Y, millennials and that, we don't have money is because we spend money on avocado toast. No, that's not true. It's because your fucking generation have gamed the system so much that have put us in such a hole that we cannot get ahead. It's not that we don't work hard enough. It's that the systems that you guys have manipulated have created such a wealth and inequality gap that it's insurmountable for us to try to catch up with it. So don't you dare fucking tell me that it's my, I just don't work hard enough and that's why I can't afford these games. Like,
Randy, it's embarrassing. Randy, what you've said here is embarrassing. Because, like, no, it's exactly what you're saying. And we've had this conversation before, right? About, like, people talking about showing the, like, console prices adjusted for inflation, whatever. And it's like, yeah, but, like, what do groceries cost for a week? You know what I mean? Of like a regular grocery trip. What's that costing you in 1999 or whatever? 91, I think he said. It's not what it costs now. What was rent like? You know what I mean? Like, something I've like talked with my parents about is like, because like my parents are like on board with like the struggle. You know what I mean? Like they're in like learning and stuff, but it takes them a second because of course their life experience is different than my life experience where I'm like, no, like rent in Schaumburg is $2,000 a month. Rent for you guys was $500. I'm not saying, you know what I mean? Of course you were making less.
But proportionally.
Yeah. That was not 90% of your income. You know what I mean? And like, and then of course, like I choose to live here, I suppose. But like,
where do you live though?
There's a million factors that go into it. Yes, of course. It goes down. But it's just that thing of like, and my parents get it. They understand. Like, you know what I mean? Like it's helping them understand this.
Yeah.
I think Randy Pitchford needs to understand this. he has gone on to sort of correct this. Let me read you this headline from GamesRadar. They tend to have kind of lengthy headlines, but I think it gets all the beats here. This is by Austin Wood. In a 557-word post to end all posts, Gearbox boss Randy Pitchford fully lays out the misunderstanding over Borderlands 4 $80 comments. I don't want anyone to pay any more than they should. Basically, he just goes on to say, like, that he understands that is expensive and that, you know... that calling saying that, like, well, the real fans will figure it out, like, is shitty, because it's like, well, hey, like, let's say I'm like fucking love Borderlands 4. I can't afford it at $80 right now. You know, I can't afford it at 60 or 70 right now either. But like, justifying $60 is a lot easier than 80 plus tax. You know what I mean? On the Switch too. So it's irritating. But that said, Randy Pitchford is, I would expect nothing less from this man, a guy who, did I say this on the show? Terminal foot and mouth syndrome.
One thing did you by any chance listen to the PAX panel that Greg Miller was on, like the keynote speech that he did?
Mm-mm.
It wasn't quite a keynote speech. Ben Starr basically came in and like interviewed him and like was like talking about like quite, it was like a unique way to do an interview for a keynote thing. And okay. One of the things that Greg was talking about was how he came up to be in the industry. And he was talking about how like when he came up in the industry, like he did everything that you would need to do. He went into journalism. He had a resume he built and everything like that to, you know, have journalism stuff. And then he got hired at IGN. But he said when he got hired, he didn't know anything about like your game devs, and he didn't know like what studios, like he didn't know the studios as much as he knew the games and stuff like that. And he learned a lot of this stuff on the job, because at that time, becoming the face of IGN was something that was a new thing that was like building up and he was creating. But then you have a world today when that is a thing, that's a standard thing, that more people are aware of the video game industry, are wanting to be influencers in the face of IGN or whatever like that. And now for him to get that job back in the day, even Greg Miller, the person that he is now, it would probably been a lot harder for him to get that job today right out of college or a year after college than it would be then. And like, I think Greg's good about like not sitting there and like shitting on people for not working hard enough to get into like their jobs and stuff like that. I don't know. It just really just bothers me. And I'm glad he retracted his fucking idiocy to a certain degree. But still, it's like the problem with this stuff is way more than it just people complaining about how much games are. It's people complaining about how much everything is and how this thing that's supposed to be a fun hobby is starting to become something that's an inexpensive luxury for a lot, or not expensive, an expensive luxury for people to be a part of. I bought way fewer games than I have in the past just because like it's so expensive.
We're going to have to talk when come January, because I'm like, dude, I haven't played 10 games this year. And like looking, not 10 new games, no, or 10 games that I would say like I want to be
top 10. You're not putting to a T?
Yeah, exactly, right. Like to a T is not going to be on there because like it's not my top 10, right? Like what do we do? You know, there's a mix of reasons for that, but like, you know, and you are right about like, listen, Randy Pitchford, like glad that you took it back and like clarified a little bit and like did apologize, but also like, you're the CEO of fucking Gearbox, dude.
Yeah.
Get it together, dog. Yeah. And to your point about Greg Miller, it's interesting. Like I haven't heard what you're talking about, but I have heard him talk about like starting out and how he was just willing to be on camera. And he's like, a lot of people were just like very camera shy back in those days.
Yeah.
And like, you know, he's clearly someone who's like does great on camera and podcasts and whatever. But like that willingness to just be that guy is like what did him so many huge favors, which I think is cool. But exactly to your point, like, if you want to make it now, you have to be a video editor and a podcast producer and a host and a writer and an influencer. And it's like not enough to just be a writer anymore, you know? And especially like you look at like, what do? You have to be an influencer if you want to get support from, you know, crowdfunding and stuff like that. Otherwise, because people just don't care about just, you know, like lowly writers anymore.
Right.
Obviously, I'm used like that's. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
You can pick up on what I'm saying there. I'm not saying that, you know. Sometimes I feel like I have to over-explain because people take things the wrong way.
Like, I wish people...
Like, use context to figure out, like, what I meant, right? Like,
I wish sense. People took things the wrong way on this podcast, and then we could just fight them online. We could fight them with our
fight
words.
Me.
And our prime drinks. I know a guy. I know a guy who would get in a ring with you, in either ring that you want.
I think I could beat Jake Paul in a fight, or the older one, Logan Paul, in a fight, because he's wrestling and it's fake. You know what I mean?
Okay, do you think you could beat either of them if you had one weapon and your weapon was just like baby oil?
Some follow-up questions. Question one.
Yeah.
In what way is that a weapon?
You just slather yourself with baby oil.
Okay, so then this other question is, am I guess, fully naked?
I'm not going to tell you. I'm not going to tell you how to use your weapon. Like, that's up to you. Naked enough.
I mean, naked enough to be slippery.
Yeah,
you know
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah,
I'm,
yeah.
Got jeans on right
you
now.
Wear like a wetsuit. Would baby oil get on?
I don't know.
Before we use that as our weapon choice, I do have to do some follow up research.
Yeah, I would need some prep time. Justin, you put this thing about the Order 1886 here. I have not heard anything about this. What's going on with this?
Well, would you have known it that there was, in fact, a sequel to The Order 1886? In fact, there were two
that were planned. Which, can you remind everyone what that was?
So The Order 1886 was a launch game for the PlayStation 4, I believe, or like a launch window game for the PlayStation 4, that, you know, is basically about like werewolves and vampires. And it was a single player kind of like third person action shooter. The problem with the game was there wasn't much to it. It was like one of those games that looked pretty. It was done in 5-6 hours. And then that was kind of it with it. And I don't think there's anything necessarily inherently wrong with a game. And it's one of those things that we have said in the past that given an opportunity to do it again with a sequel or a follow-up to it, it could have been a pretty good game. But it just never came to fruition. The game itself was not a massive sold game. And the studio kind of like fizzled out. We were looking up, Ready at Dawn was the studio. It was bought by, not Meta, the other one, the Oculus company, forget what their name was, bought by Oculus. They made a couple like VR supported games to it, and then they just kind of fizzled out as a company. But it is kind of sad when you see a game that has potential that we're just never going to see what that could have been, or where that will kind of go. And I just think it's kind of sad, not for any reason other than the fact that like, it's like, well, actually, no, it is sad. Like, can you imagine if the Lord of the Rings came out with the Two Towers and you never got the rest of that story?
Oh, dude, I get it. That's what's happening with these Spider-Verse movies.
You don't think that last one's coming out ever?
No. Never.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if it. I mean, I could be wrong, but I totally could be wrong, but I would not be surprised if it never comes out.
Again, movies that my wife loved too when she watched them.
Spider-Verse movies? Elena likes them too.
Yeah, they're really good. Great animation, fun. Really, you see all the abused artists on there and all their like hard work that they were like forced to do under Lord and Miller's foot. Apparently.
Heinous watch.
Yeah.
Those movies capitalize on the fact, I think everyone loves those movies, and it's because they make you feel like you walk out of the theater being like, I could be Spider-Man. Like, that's the whole point of the character, but like, they really, anyway. With the order stuff though, because I never played it. I never played the original one because I didn't have a PS4, and then by the time I did, like, it was years and years later. Do you think that that game was ahead of its time?
No.
No,
no.
If it came out now, you think it would be
no?
The same?
I think that game was like on the shoulders of games like Gears of War, and a game like even Gears of War now. Yeah, sure, they're coming out with the remake of Gears of War, that, you know, remake, remaster, whatever the fuck they're calling it. But like, I think that game is like of a time and a place, and I just don't think those games hold up in the same way. And I think part of the reason why Gears of War remaster, remake, whatever the fuck it is, it's going to hold up because a lot of the fact that the game is good, but also like the nostalgia that people have for that game is great. And like making it playable for today in the mind's eye of the past, I think is going to be nice for people. But this is one of those games that I just think like its spectacle was its graphics and what it looked like. The story was okay. The gameplay was fine. The whole package together was just average. I don't think it was just because it was a game ahead of its time, which is kind of sad.
Yeah, that makes sense. I would have been... to me, it sounds like the sort of game that, like, oh, if this had gone on and had a sequel, might have been able to realize some of the things that were left unrealized. But so that's a shame. Justin, have you seen any of this Persona 4 stuff?
A bunch of people aren't getting cast, and we're hearing about it, right?
So rumor has it that there's a Persona 4 remake that's going to be announced sometime soon, within the next year or so. Akin to a Persona 3 Reload style thing. But Yuri Lowenthal, famed Spider-Man voice actor, the actor for Sasuke in Naruto, and he's prolific. He's got a lot of stuff going on for him. He posted on Blue Sky in a post that has been deleted. He said this: for those who keep asking, no, I will not be returning as Yosuke for the Persona 4 remake. I asked, maybe I even begged, but they didn't want me to come back. And a lot of people, because again, this hasn't been like officially announced or anything, were like, the what? So the next day, I believe, or maybe it was the same day, Aaron Fitzgerald posted on Blue Sky as well, saying, for those asking, I have not been asked to reprise my role as Chie Satanaka in the Persona 4 remake. RIP, I am blessed to have recorded as many Persona 4 games as I did playing her. A lot of people were also like, okay, shit, well, okay. And then the next day, Amanda Wynn Lee posted on Twitter, since I've had several people ask me, no, I was not asked to voice Yukiko in the P4 remake. Now, this is very funny because this is the order in which the party members join your party in the game. It's interesting that this would happen. It's interesting that this would happen for many reasons. First of all, because, again, the game hasn't been announced, right? Now, that said, if they're not contracted by a company, then like they're not necessarily like beholden to any NDAs with them or anything like that, right? But the question is like, why would you do this? Is this not bad for your job? What do you think of this?
In Persona 3 Reload, did they re-record all their lines?
They recasted the actors.
So I mean, at a certain point, like, what do they have to prove to this company? There's no NDA involved in here. What are they legally not supposed to say? They're clearly not being asked back. They're being spurned by this company anyway. So why would they keep this quiet if they were reaching out and finding out about this?
Because I think that this does it. I mean, like, for me, I think that this is bad for your career to kind of, like, blab about this. Do you know what I mean? To sort of, like, go and sort of, like, spoil this. Do you know what I mean? Like, again, like, this is you're not beholden to any NDAs or anything like that, but if another company looks at you and they're like, oh, you are out here like talking about like secret projects publicly, and again, like, I get it, but I'm almost like, I don't know.
This might be like a really stupid question. Aren't they voice actors union still on strike?
I believe so. Not entirely sure how all of that works.
So I don't know how all that, I don't know how all that stuff works in it, but it, to me, this reads, again, we have a company who's fucking over voice actors.
I don't know enough about the strike to say. I don't think, like, the Persona 3 Reload cast was good, and people were a little upset when it was announced that the main cast wasn't going to be like reprising their roles, but like people were like, did accept those actors in those roles and stuff like that. I think they did a good job. It's also like, as this has been pointed out, like, the woman who played Chie, what's her name? Erin Fitzgerald, was not the original voice actor for Chie. She was the actress for Chie in Persona 4 Golden, but not the original game. Troy Baker voices Kanji. He's the guy with the biker and like leather jacket and whatever. But then in all of the spinoff games, he's voiced by Matt Mercer. So like, it's like not uncommon for the, like, it's not unheard of for these Persona games to like switch actors, you know, for re-releases and whatever else, especially with the Persona 3 Reload thing. But it is just odd, I think, that you have all these people sort of like coming out and saying this before the game has even been announced. But also, I bet Yuri Lowenthal was a lot cheaper back in 2005 whenever they recorded those voices, you know.
And who knows, like, some of the context of that, too. Like, it is interesting that, like, as you said, which I didn't pick up like on because I'm not, like, a huge fan of the game in the same way that you are.
My hot take is I did not like it that much.
Okay, so, but, like, to know that they came out in that order, that might be another kind of, like, weird meta thing. Like, that, it just seems like an odd...
Yeah, it's weird
to that. But yeah, I mean, yes, you could say it's something about like the it's not good for those actors to a certain degree. But I also think end of the day, what do they have the right? Like, how did they find out about this to begin with? Like, was it just something they asked about? Like, maybe like if I made a guess, right? And I just went up to them and it was like, so are you going to cast me in the remake? And they said, no. Does that necessarily confirm that they're having it? Or does that kind of like confirm that I'm not included in any further projects?
I mean, I'll say this right now. I have not been contacted about voicing Yukiko in the Persona 4 Golden or the Persona 4 remake.
Yeah. So does I think that you've just confirmed that they're making the remake, though.
Yeah, I know that we're joking, but I think that, you know, someone like Yuri Lowenthal, like the voice cast, from what it sounds like it, to me, the way I read this, it seems like Yuri Lowenthal did reach out about it and said, he tweeted him, I'm not in it. And then these other actors and actresses are like, oh, I have not been, people are asking me about this, but apparently this is a thing. Do you know what I mean? Like, right, I'm not right. in it. So it's
and,
no.
And like, even then, it, like, even if Yuri did it, like, if he does it, but like just asked, hey, are you going to be doing a remake like Reload? Do you need me? And they said, no, we're not going to use you if we do this, or we're not going to use you in any further Persona things. Maybe it's not quite breaking an NDA in the same way that it's like officially announcing it. It's that announcement by omission to a certain degree. And that just gets a little fuzzy. Like, I don't know how to necessarily do it, but I don't think Yuri Lowenthal A, necessarily cares. I don't think that's going to stop his career.
He's going to be just fine. He's Spider-Man. Right. he's going to be just fine.
He was the Avatar, actually, in Xenoblade Chronicles X, one of the voices you can choose. So don't just, he's not just Spider-Man, he's the Avatar.
That's
mostly silent protagonist.
all right, Yuri Lowenthal, what else has he done? Like I said, he's Sasuke, I know that. He's in Big Hero 6, he's in Arcane, Ben 10. Oh, I think he's Ben 10 in Ben 10. He's pretty prolific. A lot of anime. He's in a lot of anime. Let's see, video games. He was in Incredibles 2 as additional voices. That's a pretty big get.
Oh my God. He's married to, this is weird. He's married to Tara Platt. And the reason why I said that's weird is because Tara Platt also plays the Avatar voice in Xenoblade Chronicles X.
Why do I know Tara Platt?
Persona 3 Reload played Elizabeth. Tekken 8,
who the
she
fuck
played
is Elizabeth.
You know, Elizabeth, the common character name of every Persona. It's like Morgana.
Oh,
Yusuke,
oh no, she was
Elizabeth.
Got it. Okay, I know who Elizabeth is. I mean, he's in a fuck ton of stuff.
She played Edelgard. There you go.
Yeah, of course. He played Frodo in Lord of the Rings Conquest.
Excuse me. Wait. What game is Edelgard in?
I truly don't know. Oh,
you'll know one day.
He played the prince in Prince of Persia: Forgotten Sands.
Oh.
I mean, he's like literally all over the place. Like, I'm like trying, I'm getting a little overwhelmed looking at his filmography and like trying to find like the things that are even like, like notable, because it's like so much. He's been Spider-Man for a long time and like a lot of Spider-Man games and stuff. Yeah, Xenoblade Chronicles X. Yeah. He was Davis in Titanfall 2.
Oh, we all remember Davis. Davis and Elizabeth.
Davis. Yeah, Davis. Huge. He was Dion Akuato in Psychonauts 2.
I remember that character a lot, actually. One of my favorites of all time.
Me too. He's Spider-Man in Marvel Rivals. That's a good get. Okay, I think this is the end of the episode. Thanks for listening. If you're interested in supporting us and hearing more of our Yuri Lowenthal wiki deep dives, you can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/hitboxpod by becoming a $1 podcast producer or a $3 deluxe podcast producer like Jay Noel, GKS, and Josh Durham for that additional 30-minute bonus episode every single week. If you can't support us there, that's fine. You can follow us on Blue Sky at hitboxpod or rate this episode in your podcast player of choice. Justin, am I forgetting anything? Yes, I am. You can join our Discord server. The link to that is in the description of this episode. Anything to add, Justin?
Edelgard is from Fire Emblem Three Houses.
Gotcha. Don't be like me and don't drink Prime. I'm a child and I just like sweet drinks, I suppose.
But you're an influencer, Peter. You told people you drink Prime. People are going to drink Prime.
I didn't tell any. Who did I tell? I told you to keep that to yourself.
Okay. You did say that.
So, I confided in you, a friend. So if you could keep that to yourself, I would appreciate that.
You're right. I did say that a lot. I will not share it with anyone ever.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it. Me. We'll catch you next week. Always remember, old games are old. Bye.
Bye.
I'll stop recording.